Aseguró en salud al achacar lo sucio del proceso a los propios políticos participantes.
Ellos manejaron el proceso. No quieran poner el punto negro en el tribunal porque ellos fueron los responsables de llenar esa saca.
Al final, los ganadores reconocidos por el tribunal fueron por el Partido Liberal Mauricio Villeda, por el Partido Nacional Juan Orlando Hernández y Xiomara Castro por Libre, que la llevaba como candidata única. Pero la situación no paró en conocer los resultados. La crisis política que vive Honduras tuvo su pico más alto el 12 de diciembre, cuando fueron destituidos los cuatro magistrados de la Sala Constitucional de la Corte Suprema de Justicia por conspirar contra la seguridad del país, dijo el presidente del Congreso, Juan Orlando Hernández.
Es delicadísimo lo que hemos detectado. Es prácticamente una conspiración.
La votación para la destitución fue de 97 diputados a favor y 31 en contra en un Congreso totalmente militarizado. Inmediatamente, casi todos los sectores del país condenaron la acción, que quedó atrapada entre los aires navideños y de despedida del año.
La democracia es materia prima para que un pueblo se abra camino y a buen futuro pueda llegar. Debe ser hábito cotidiano, buena costumbre, en la oficina, taller, escuela y comunidad.
Desde Radio Progreso en Honduras les informó José Peraza.
Aquí concluye esta edición del informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas y medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Hey, this is Uncle Dennis here. I want to ask you to support the Anarchist Library. The Sub Rosa hosts Santa Cruz's long-running Anarchist Library, around since the early 1990s, containing thousands of volumes on a variety of subjects, including ecology, history, philosophy, literature, politics, indigenous studies, feminism, psychology, and a small collection of zines. But did you know there are several ways you can support the Anarchist Library? Here are five ways you can help. Submit your review. Sub Rosa is interested in reviews of radical books, zines, and music. If you found something at Sub Rosa that you really liked or didn't, we encourage you to submit a review. You could buy books. There's a list of books we have in the library that they'd like to have, a wish list at a major online bookseller. You could donate books. You're an awesome radical, and you have some awesome books, so many, in fact, that you're ready to donate some of your library to the Anarchist Library. Just drop them off at Sub Rosa. You can donate cash. The Anarchist Library is hosted at Sub Rosa, and so by donating to the space, you are supporting the project. Alternatively, you can donate directly to the library, which occasionally buys new books for the collection. And lastly, check out the books and read them. We love to see the books in circulation, so check out Books at Sub Rosa for 2 weeks or more. This brought to you by the Anarchist Librarians at the Sub Rosa Cafe.
What's up, y'all? This is Lyrics Born in the house. I'm chilling on the Global Local with my man Sandino, baby, FRSC 101 FM. Oh!
This is Ian from Fugazi, and this is Radio Free Santa Cruz. Music should be free, and so should radio.
Of fruits and vegetables on a tenth of an acre garden.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's going to be a hot show in the Old Town tonight. It's, wow, well, we've got a discussion of cemetery protection, food not bombs, and then at 7 o'clock we're going to have a replay of the audio of the Santa Cruz 11 / Linda LeMaster Forum, where there's a discussion of the essentially political repression in Santa Cruz, trials of political activists, showcased in a recent community TV show by Sandra Lee. But we're going to have some live stuff, so don't go away. We're going to be looping it up here very shortly. And before we do, I will, take a brief musical aside here and invite you to consider calling in. If you want, write down this number. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. And that's 831 for those of you who are away, 427-3772. Name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. We go for 2 hours on Thursday nights and for 3.5 hours on Sunday mornings. So if you don't catch me or don't get in now, you can get in later. There are two lines into the studio. The first one, as mentioned before, 427-3772. The second one, 469-3119. 469-3119. We are streaming as well as broadcasting at 101.3. If you want to get to the stream, go to freakradio.org and click on the little red dot on the top of the antenna. That is our previously secret bit of information that has now been exposed for all the world to know. So I'm going to begin by introducing my guests here in the studio. We hope the microphones are working. We'll find out. First, going from, I guess, my left to my right and your right to your left, we have Roxanne from Food Not Bombs. Hey there, Roxanne. Belly up to the mics close.
Hello.
Hello.
And thank you.
And thank you. Also a longtime veteran of the Occupy Santa Cruz movement, a worker in a number of other activist groups since then. And what else can we say about you? Well, we'll let you talk about those issues if you'd like. Danny, we have you. You're next. You're also with Food Not Bombs.
That's correct.
And you've also, of course, a well-known terrorist. You're known for slipping past the NSA and the TSA and all the other SAs.
Let's not talk about that.
We won't discuss that. These two are from Food Not Bombs, which is a group that serves, I'll repeat this repeatedly so people can come if they want, every Saturday, 4 o'clock. I guess next Saturday it's going to be because of the cold weather at the post office, or are you moving back to Laurel Park?
Post office.
Okay, that's the main post office downtown. It's across from Verve and Jamba Juice and Town Clock.
Near the Clock Tower.
Near the Clock Tower, right. And more important, Food Not Bombs is looking for volunteers, and it has a website, a new website. What is that website? We'll give us a moment, give the folks a moment to try to answer that question. You have 30 seconds. We'll get back to. Actually, I have that website information somewhere, and I will try to give it to you later in the show.
Okay, thank you.
And we have two other very questionable guests as well. These are non-Occupy Santa Cruz activists. They're not homeless. They are. I guess you say you're a homeless advocate at different times, Van and Lisa. You've been a supporter of Camp Paradise, for example. You were telling me, and I guess it's the 12-year-old now defunct self-run homeless campground under the somewhat authoritarian Larry Templeton in those days, but nonetheless. But here, I've called you into the studio today to discuss a number of issues. First of all, let me introduce you. Hello, Van.
Hello. There's no place like London.
And are we actually say something again?
There's no place like London.
Hey, it works. Okay, excellent. And you, madam, who are you?
Elisa Berlin. Hello.
Hello, Elisa. Good to see you in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
No, sure, no problem.
Good evening, Santa Cruz. Why aren't you burning yet?
And, I concur.
And these two are revolutionaries of the tongue, as we like to call it. But indeed, I invited you in the past, Van, to come in to talk about issues like guns, which you have a different view than the, shall we say, I would say probably mainstream Santa Cruz liberal view of gun control forever.
Mainstream and Santa Cruz, those don't really go together.
Well, I think they do, really, because I think Santa Cruz is really mainstream, even though it pretends to be otherwise.
Right.
And so I know we wanted to talk once about, there was some controversy about should one own a gun or should the government be taking away guns? That was an issue. But the reason you're here today is to discuss another issue, which has to do with your concern about anybody trashing cemeteries. And it actually became an issue when a particular homeless encampment you found in a cemetery prompted you to... Shall we say...
Do bad things to it.
Take action against the homeless property, which I would normally, and perhaps manned up, seriously criticizing you for. You got into a debate with one of our well-known homeless activists, or at least certainly a photographer and a journalist, and one of the former Santa Cruz 11, Alex DeRosi, and that was a rather heated discussion online. I invited Alex to the studio tonight. He's welcome to call in, as is anyone else. About this debate, and I'm going to have to now decide on air, because I didn't talk to you all beforehand, who's limited in their time. How are you doing for time, you guys? Not, you are somewhat limited. Okay, so we're going to begin with the Food Not Bombs segment of the show. And I guess, you know, I was active in Food Not Bombs years ago, and I can go back into that at some point. But Food Not Bombs has recently risen again. I have Keith McHenry, the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, on occasionally by phone, and he is very concerned about Food Not Bombs not being a charity group, not being a church group, not being a feed the poor once a week kind of group, but being a group that is actively concerned with food, not bombs, that is to say, publicizing the message, which is we are going in the completely wrong direction thanks to the criminals who are running the country and the city as well, for that matter. What are your thoughts about that? Is this too political a message for today's Food Not Bombs? Who wants to answer that question? You get 5 points if you answer that one.
I'll belly up. I think that everything you said was right on. I think the local group is firmly behind the original message and intent of Food Not Bombs. We do have at our table all the literature. We do educate when asked those who come up why we're there and what our purpose is. I do want to definitely emphasize, though, that there is a very much a compassionate, you know, direct action component to this group of people who are involved, who are very committed to our local houseless and hungry population, which are many, as we know, in Santa Cruz, and right now being targeted, as you also are very well aware of. And so by the mere fact of just standing out on the sidewalk and feeding hungry people, that in itself is a political act in this tense environment in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, surely. I know that was one of the reasons the original San Francisco incarnation of Food Not Bombs was attacked in 1988 when I was active down here. We went up there and we supported them. The Coal Valley Improvement Association, the Haight-Ashbury Improvement Association, the San Francisco Police Department, and then the great liberal mayor Art Agnos, who was, of course, the Obama of his day, the local Obama, you know, was going to do such wonderful things, such a great liberal. If he didn't endorse, he allowed the San Francisco Police Department to begin arrests of Food Not Bombs in Golden Gate Park when they were simply serving people a meal once a week. It was not, it was nothing to shout about, but the people, some of the real estate people felt, I guess, it was lowering the values of the area. And I don't know if there were screams of needles and trash, and that may be another issue we'll bring up at some point later in the show on another line, but indeed, it was an attack on the right, on the idea that homeless people cluster like flies around these meals. It becomes a magnet for the wrong kind of people. You are going to have murderers, rapists, and ne'er-do-wells coming to, supported by not just the homeless lack of services centers meals, but Food Not Bombs. And have you received any criticism for this for your effort, or have you been mostly getting positive comments?
Well, the general public has been very, very supportive of us. We haven't had any criticism whatsoever from people just who are customers at the post office where we are located, and they've all been very supportive. So by far the community has been very, very supportive of us.
I know that Mayor Coonerty and I think former Mayor Matthews both had stern admonitions to Rene Curry, who gives out food every Sunday in front of the what is now Forever 21, what used to be the Borders bookstore downtown on Pacific Avenue. She told her the Curry and her husband that they were doing a disservice to the community. Why didn't they move indoors? And indeed, previously, another religious figure used to serve at the town clock, actually used to serve downtown near the Cinema 9 Theater on the other side of the street. And he was driven away by the Downtown Association when Mayor Matthews was actually mayor back in 2006. He was driven all around the town. He finally ended up at the town clock, and he was driven away from there. Now he serves, or used to serve, once a week out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center on Sunday. So it isn't that they didn't create a law or start sending in the police like they did back in 1989 and 88 in Santa Cruz. I was arrested, and so were many others, for serving back then. Or like the San Francisco police did in 1988 through 95, and still have occasionally. Or the Orlando police did last year when they arrested people again and again in Orlando, Florida. But there has been pressure on Food Not Bombs. Have you? I know that you. I've heard tell, and I've been told not to press this too closely because you are still in delicate negotiations. I understand, Roxanne, you handled this very well by other activists who commended you for it. When an irate postal official came out last week and told you to move along, and you are on private property. Post office private property didn't seem to kind of connect with me, but you successfully resisted the attempt to pressure you to move, even though the police were called. You want to talk about that? You don't have to, but if you want to, I invite you to.
I'm happy to. And we can have Daniel chime in as well. So, as you said, there was a security guard at the post office who, when we arrived, informed us within about 10 minutes that we were on private property. We needed to move. We were asked to move to the sidewalk. We were given a piece of paper that he highlighted and told that there were two things that we were doing, which were breaking the law and or breaking their rules. I'm not sure if they were actually laws, but it was on official USPS letterhead. And one of them was disturbances, which included loud noises and yelling, et cetera, which we claimed we are not doing.
Maybe people were chewing loudly, perhaps.
No, people closed their mouths. They were very polite.
Okay, well.
Yep, did not speak with their mouths, you know, full of food. And the other thing was, I think it was like politicking and vending, which we also informed him that we were giving away free food, so there was nothing being sold. And we, he said, well, I'm going to have to call the police, and we invited him to do so. And so he did. And
how long before they arrived?
Not too long. They were pretty prompt. There was one officer at first. There ended up eventually becoming quite a scene with four cop cars showing up and four officers who found no other important business at that time to attend to the situation. And it did drag on for close to an hour. They were there.
Were you able to feed during this time?
We were able to, but I would say that their presence was a discouragement to some of the people coming up. We did have some people come to the table and say, you know, may I please get a bowl for my friend who's afraid to come up here because of the police.
And was there a drop from the number of people the previous week?
Absolutely. Significantly.
And what was the number drop?
I would say at least half. We've been feeding between 40 to 50 people regularly for the last 5 weeks, and there was maybe 20 people, 25 max. We can't really tell for sure. We normally have a count system on our plates, but we were a little distracted with the commotion. So I will say, to their credit, the police officers did hear us out, and we stood our ground and said, you know, we do not believe we're breaking the law. This is public property. We have a right to be here. These two items that the gentleman's pointing out to us do not apply, and therefore we are not leaving. And the situation, you know, mostly took place with the police actually talking with the security guard for quite some time, who I have to say, of all the people in the situation, was the most obnoxious.
His name?
I don't know. But he was very upset that we were there. He was very adamant that we had no right to be there. He completely, you know, reiterated many, many times that we were on private property, which was, again, confusing to all of us.
Did the police agree with him that you were on private property?
They did not.
What did they say, and specifically, if you remember?
Well, to kind of wrap it up, where it came to at the end, I mean, they said quite a bit, but where it came down to at the end was that they, meaning the four officers and the security guard, went inside the building, and one of the other volunteers who was with us came back and told me, they're on the phone with the postmaster. And I said, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And she said, I don't know. We'll see. And after that, the first officer who had come out to the scene came back to us and said that...
his name? Are we talking Officer Sergeant Azua, perhaps?
Yes.
Kind of a chubby fellow, ever smiling.
He was very kind. He was very kind in his role, I must say. But he was mostly the spokesperson of the group. And I know that maybe sounds... it was a delicate situation. I will respect that he seemed to respect our insistence that we were within our rights and that we were...
It took him an hour, however, to reach that decision? Or?
Well, what it came to, I think the security fellow was being quite aggressive in trying to get them to
perhaps
to arrest us.
Made a citizen's arrest of the security
and
fellow.
And I think the officers felt their hands were tied. I mean, that was really what it felt like to me. I don't know for sure, but, you know, I think they were not convinced that we were breaking the law, and I don't think that they... I think they felt pretty confident that we felt pretty confident in our rights, and
but
we weren't being intimidated.
Not confident enough to spend less than an hour delaying.
Well, I may be
decision.
Exaggerating about the time frame. I mean,
half
you know,
an hour?
It was at least 30 minutes that they were present. You know, time moves quite slowly when you're surrounded by four officers and lights flashing in the street. So, just to wrap it up, they came back, and where things were left, which was an interesting kind of impasse, was, and I quote, something along the lines of, you know, their boss is talking to, meaning the post office, their boss is talking to our boss, and we're going to try to come up with a solution that works for everyone, meaning us as well. So.
A solution that works for everyone. I mean, but there was no noise, and there was no vending. What was the problem?
I'm well, not, honestly, the security
the
guard,
of the
first thing
guard.
The security guard, yeah. One of the first things he had said to us that we had not asked for permission to be there.
But I thought Ed Fry said the Constitution does not need a permit.
Right, which was, again, one of our confusions. Well, we don't, you know, why do we need, you know, the office is closed, it's a Saturday, we were far and away from the doors. We
and
were
it
not
had been
locking.
Done numerous times before. People
and it was
had
the third week,
there.
And we also brought that up, that we had been there for 3 weeks and there had been no complaints. In fact, we've had people come from the post office and stop, congratulate us, thank us, and give us money, you know, if not stay to have some food. So there's been a real, like Daniel had said, there's been a real positive response. We had probably four or five people come up that day who asked about Food Not Bombs, had never heard of us, and we had an opportunity to educate them about our group.
Did the security guard... seemed to have any specific complaints he said had been referred to him, or did he have any orders that had been given to him either?
Well, that actually does bring another point. One of the things the officers had said was that we could stay, and that they were leaving, and he asked us to please leave the place, you know, very clean, to not have any debris or trash or anything, and that there had been a lot of trash left around the building, to which I commented, yeah, I saw a lot of broken glass around the corner. Maybe you should take care of that.
Rather than spend half an hour chatting with you.
Right. I mean, we had, you know, we had a recycling container, we had a trash container well labeled, we had a broom, you know, we were tidying up the area, and we did tell them that we would not only leave it clean, we'd leave it cleaner than we found it, which we did.
You promised to wash your hands afterward and also brush your teeth.
No. But we did leave it cleaner than we had found it.
As so, we did on previous weeks as well.
Go closer to the mic, Danny.
As we did on previous weeks as well, we are very aware of our surroundings and try to keep it as clean as possible. So it's not. This is not something that arose out of that one incident.
Uh-huh. So, but again, in answer to my question, I guess I'm hearing you. I didn't hear you say there were any complaints specified, and you're shaking your head, Roxanne, nor was there a specific order given by a higher-up to get rid of these scoundrels with the... Did you have a Food Not Bombs banner out?
Yes, a very large banner.
Politicking on the steps.
Actually, the banner was more on the sidewalk side of things. It was a little further away from our table, but yes, we had a very large banner.
You should know better than to think you couldn't use the First Amendment on even public property, that is the property of the postal system. Besides, as you know, if you try to use such a banner in front of a courthouse after 7 o'clock, that will be construed as a violation of the curfew law.
Well, it was only 4 o'clock, and we were there for... a little over
just
an hour.
Just make sure you have your watch with you and be close. Actually, there's no curfew at the post office, as far as I know, yet. But there are signs, I believe, no trespassing, no loitering. The no homeless has not yet been put up, but that should be coming along sooner or later. You know, I do want to ask Van and Elisa if they have any questions or comments about this, since you've been listening so patiently and so quietly.
Oh, I was actually not paying very much attention.
Typical.
Yeah, sorry.
How about you, Elisa?
Oh, no, I just, I really respect that you stood up to those cops and stood your guys' ground. I think that's really important. Most important.
On the other hand, they interfered with your operation for half an hour, it sounds like.
Somewhat. I mean, they definitely, I think their presence, they were not standing at the table, but they were, you know, grouped about 30 feet away. And
did they originally ask you to leave?
They did. Some, well, they, or they did
Sergeant
at least,
Azua, the kindly sergeant,
yeah,
asked you to leave?
Yeah, I don't know, if,
oh,
I don't
come,
know
come.
If it was specifically framed that way. I think it was more... he repeated what the security guard had said to us, which was, you know, this is... The security guard had asked us at one point, or told us that since we hadn't asked permission, we should go ahead and move down to the sidewalk, and that would be okay. And when pressed later with the police, who repeated that, you know, they said, I thought the security said that you could move down to the sidewalk. At that point, we said... We said, well, in fact, that is a law, and we know that blocking the flow of pedestrian traffic is in fact a law, which is why we didn't do that, officer. We held our ground here because we're on public property and we believe we're not interfering with any business. We're not, you know, we're not selling anything. We're not making loud noises. We really have a right to be here. So we just kept really repeating our stance, and it seemed to work.
You know, this reminds me of an incident 4 years ago when I was on the metro, in the Transit Authority area in front of on Pacific Avenue, and I was interviewing a couple of homeless people, and a security guard came over and told the homeless people to move along. And I said, I told them, you don't have to move along if you don't want to. And he then came over to me and demanded to know who I was. And I said, who are you? Show me, your, you know, what's your name? I'm not going to give you my name. He said, I sure you do. You're, you know, you're an official here. You're employed by an agency that gets public funding. What's your name? He then called the police and had me cited and ultimately convicted for trespass at the Metro. Which took a long time and involved all kinds of gyrations. I even had an attorney who volunteered to help in that because the Metro is not only a public area, it is also an area that has a special law covering how people have to be told if they have to leave the Metro, they have to be given special rights. But what they did was they pulled a different law out that said interfering with the business. Even though it would be hard. And the way I interfered with the business at the trial that transpired, I hadn't known this was going to be their line, was that if you're familiar with the 7-foot-long sign that says Metro, which is on Pacific Avenue, he claimed I was blocking the sign in front of Pacific Avenue. Mm. Interesting. So it's unusual the kind of lengths they'll go to. And
I think it was your beard.
I definitely had a beard at that time. There's no question about it. So... do you anticipate this kind of problem coming up again, or do you think that all has been resolved, or do you think they'll cook up with some new idea on Saturday, I guess tomorrow, day after tomorrow, when you show up at 4 o'clock?
Well, I haven't been talking as much because I wasn't actually there for most of the incident on Saturday, but from what I understand, it does seem like it has been resolved. I think, as Roxanne mentioned, they were on the phone with the postmaster, and as far as we're aware, it's resolved at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to go ahead and proceed on Saturday and be there and hope for the best and hope that we've made our case, you know, that we have a right to be there. And we'll go from there. I mean, at this point... you know, our main goal is to feed the hungry and to have a public presence and to educate the public about where our priorities, as you said earlier, our priorities are as a culture, and to let people know we have this abundance of food that is being wasted, and the priorities that are meant, you know, the monies that are set aside to help those in need are not always spent in direct service.
You don't say.
And what we're doing is, as I said, it's compassion in action. You know, it's direct service, mm-hmm. and for me, it seems criminal to make criminals out of people feeding the hungry.
I would be the first to agree with you. But perhaps Van disagrees on that issue.
No, actually, if I could find an issue to disagree on, I would. But I was just thinking this is probably one of the few forms of action that I can't find anything to criticize about.
Awesome. I'd have to agree with that.
I guess the issue for me, again, is I'm very suspicious. First of all, the whole thing doesn't seem transparent at all in terms of how the police were behaving. Why should they have to call the postmaster? Why would it take half an hour or even longer? Because initially you said you thought it might have been about an hour, maybe at least half an hour, you're saying. How this in fact, intimidates a group of people who are trying to use this and who may feel maybe they've got a warrant out for sleeping, you know, in a public place, which is illegal in Santa Cruz after 11. So, you know, this is a form of intimidating poor people. And the police, if they agreed with you, I don't see why, when they initially came up, didn't say to the security guard, you know, this isn't public private property, sorry, as long as they're not violating some other law, can't help you. And having four squad cars? I mean, how big was your group? Were you menacing the postmaster, perhaps?
Well, they came up one at a time. It was first one officer, and then, you know, within 5 to 10 minutes, another one arrived, and then in another few minutes, another one arrived. So that eventually, during the course of whatever period of time that they were there, there ended up being four officers.
It was backup time, or lunchtime. They were hungry.
Did they avail themselves? Did you offer them some food?
Actually, Daniel and I did walk over and offer them food, which they politely declined.
Indeed. What kind of food were you serving, and will you be serving tomorrow, day after tomorrow, on Saturday at 4 o'clock?
Yes, 4 o'clock at the post office, a fresh, warm, vegan meal, and usually at least a couple courses. We get quite grand. We've got some pretty amazing cooks in our volunteer force, so sometimes we end up with like a 5-course meal, all vegan, all free. And it's pretty tasty stuff. We served, what's it called, pasta fagioli or something like that. Basically, beans and pasta and tomatoes and veggies and a big old stew with what do we have, like a bruschetta on the side with mushrooms and beans and all this other good stuff.
Again, my mouth's beginning to water.
No, the food's amazing. It really is.
Okay, now I have a point of criticism. You didn't offer them pork?
No, just had to bring out the old pig joke. You know, so this is coming up on Saturday at 4 o'clock. How can people assist Food Not Bombs if they want to, should we say, become part of the cooking squad or part of the legal team in the event that you face real problems, which I'm sure could never happen in Santa Cruz? This is a progressive community. We don't see that kind of, wait a minute, I'm going to trial on Monday. Actually, I'm going to a hearing on Monday for preliminary to Santa Cruz 11, folks. Let's not forget them. But I'll be talking about them in a bit later. Yeah, there'll be a hearing tomorrow. I'll mention that. Thank you, Roxanne. We are going to a readiness hearing tomorrow. 7 defendants, 7 attorneys, probably a number of Occupy Santa Cruz and other political supporters who are wondering what the heck is going on with this crazy prosecution. That's going to be at the actual hearing starts at 9 o'clock. It's going to be mainly to make sure that everything is in readiness for the longer ordeal, which begins on Monday at 9 o'clock. This is at the courthouse in Department 6. But I think there's going to be some coffee served for those who come at 8 o'clock or earlier. So for all you early birds, come on down there tomorrow. And then the next day, come to Food Not Bombs' meal in the afternoon. Bring your camera, bring your phone, so you can, if you're a person with a smartphone, or even a dumb phone, in case you need to call friends to come over. I don't use cell phones myself, but bring, you know, everything you can to keep documenting what's going on in case the police get another country order from on high. It's not, you know, or in case they've suddenly worked out some new concerns that they may have. Like, you know, maybe you need to move indoors, you know, to Florida or someplace that's more, has a nicer climate this time of year. I mean, it's getting chilly. You don't want to, you know, upset the homeless people. The sun's going down. It's very depressing at the post office. Why don't you go somewhere else?
Well, in response to all of that, and also bring your hunger and bring your hungry friends, because, again, it's we ended up with leftovers for the first time.
What did
and
you do with them?
They actually got distributed amongst the volunteers a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But
So even they get fed. So volunteer and you might get fed.
That's right.
And how do you volunteer?
One easy way to get in touch with us is through Facebook. Where we do have a page through that corporate window. So if you want to go that route, just Google Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. You'll find us very easily. And I keep looking up the website. I'm very apologetic that I don't have it at the top of my head. I'm just going to have to let you know else some other time. But I remember it's a weird jumble of SCFNBS, whether it's before or after .org. And it's not easily searchable. So if you look for it on Google, it's not coming up. It's a new page, and it's really just a splash page that just says, here we are. We do have a Gmail account. And that is also on the Facebook page. I'm sorry, we're not so prepared tonight with our info.
There is a foodnotbombs-sc@riseup.net.
No, that's the old one.
That's the old one. All right, so let's put that one aside here.
Yeah, that's from an old retired group from years past.
Years ago, I don't think I have it either. I thought I did because
I know
it was mentioned.
Well,
one of the meetings.
I mean, you don't have to be a Facebook member to get into Facebook Landia. So if you have an internet connection, you could certainly go to the Facebook page, and our about will have the Gmail on there, so maybe you can search it.
Or just come by on Saturday at 4.
Or come, yeah, or meet us face-to-face, and we'll give you the lowdown. We're always looking for food donations, cooking utensils and supplies, and obviously volunteers who want to help with cooking. We cook on Saturdays from 12 to 3:30, and then we serve at 4.
Fair enough. We've been talking with Roxanne and Danny, and you know, I'll take one last lunge into the internet to see if I can find this particular deal here, which I may be able to find. And Roxanne's also searching to see if we can actually give you a website to go to. Facebook is pretty good for Food Not Bombs. Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. And what have we got here? We have Santa Cruz Indie Media. Food Not Bombs needs help. Let's see how recent that is. It looks like it's 7 years old. That ain't working too well. Almost back in the days when you started Indie Media, Van, when you're one of the originators of that group.
That is a long time ago.
And it is. Here we go. Food Not Bombs meeting. It's on the Occupy Santa Cruz website. The next meeting is 15th of November. This is a little old, so it doesn't have it either. Call the Huff line if you want to volunteer, and I will get in touch with Roxanne directly, and she can get in touch with you. Or you can come down on Saturday at 4 o'clock, as you were saying, Danny, and be a part of the situation. I suspect, I would assume you're probably not going to have any problem, but you never can tell. This is a crazy town, and it sometimes crazy things happen. In fact, quite frequently crazy things happen, I'm afraid. So there. I'm now going to, you're welcome to hang out, you guys. I'm going to turn now to Van and Elisa for their tale of terror at the what cemetery is it?
Evergreen.
At the Evergreen Cemetery. That's the cemetery that is near where Camp Paradise used to be, right? Or am I wrong? About
the
that?
Industrial Park, Costco, yeah, that area.
So it's on the which side of the river? The east side of the river or the west side?
The opposite side from Camp Paradise.
So it's on the other side of the river. There's another cemetery over there. There's different cemeteries all around the town.
Oh, there's the main obvious one on Graham Hill. But, yeah, this is the Evergreen Cemetery, the one that's more, I don't know if it's officially abandoned, but it's much older and less busy.
It's not officially abandoned, actually, but it's adjacent from one of the schools.
Okay,
I'm directionally challenged, so I can't tell you.
I have a similar problem. I don't know which way.
No. The large one is Santa Cruz Memorial that you're probably thinking of on Graham Hill, near the Denny's.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one that was right next to Camp Paradise.
Yes. I was reviewing, and of course the reason I called you on the air, I called you today and asked you to come on the air, was to look at discuss this sort of thread that showed up on, San Lorenzo River washes plastic waste on Seabright Beach after storm, and you made an initial comment that you wondered what portion of this trash came from homeless campers living along the river. Now,
those bastards, yes.
And I was concerned that there have been a lot of Take Back Santa Cruz types, if you're familiar with Take Back Santa Cruz.
Yes, they're a Scotts Valley group, aren't they?
They're a Santa Cruz group, but they had a Scotts Valley. Well, there was a satirical Scotts Valley group that sort of was posting some a couple years ago, I think. But Take Back Santa Cruz is headed by people like Annalisa Cube, Dexter Cube, and a number of other folks. And they've actually elected a city council member, at least previously a co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz, Pamela Comstock. And they talk about public safety, and they talk about cleaning up trash. But they also talk a lot about homeless loiterers, homeless panhandlers, quality of life. They tend to have a slant about getting rid of illegal campers, whether they're neat or messy, whoever they are. And it's an issue, as I've raised on the show, is Save Our Shores, when it does its cleanups, tells its members not to bother clean homeless campsites, because that's property, that's their homes, that's what they have. And similarly, the Clean Team, which has recently been doing a lot of cleanup work in the last month with TJ Magallanes and others, has instructed its people, as I understand it from TJ, to be careful not to go after people's survival gear and property. Now, you posted some statements that said you had, or perhaps one of your associates here, you, Elisa, I think, may have made a confession earlier.
It was all me.
Who,
all
you
me.
Know, you, the,
not
you,
all.
When you saw a messy campsite, in your view, desecrating a grave area, you became upset. And
yes.
You want to talk about that, Elisa?
Sure. Basically,
before you do,
yes.
I want to advise you, this becomes an archived account and can be accessed by anybody, including our friends in the District Attorney's Office or the Santa Cruz Police Department. So be advised. Go ahead.
Thanks for the reminder.
Sure.
Okay, so basically, what happened? Do you want me to just discuss what happened that day?
Sure,
or?
If you'd like. I mean, what led to this controversy? You know?
Well, basically, a little bit of backstory here. I'm a cemetery preservationist and grave restorationist, which means basically the obvious. I just take care of largely abandoned grave sites and cemeteries and restore what I can with what tools I have available at those specific cemeteries. Basically, I was visiting a cemetery, not on a cleanup date, but Van and I were just visiting, as you do, as all normal people do.
Enjoying the scenery. Doesn't everyone do that?
It was a lovely day out, and so we were strolling along Evergreen Cemetery, and I discovered, which is also a historical landmark because it's the second oldest cemetery in Santa Cruz County. I found a giant mess on a family plot. Several graves were in it, large plot. Basically, cans, piss marks on headstones and in that area. Basically just filth. It wasn't a neat campsite. It was not respectful by any means. It was like a couple of drunken teenagers had been there, but it was obvious that these people were homeless.
Because
I have no issue with drug use whatsoever, and but there was bags of meth, beer cans, just crap, toilet paper that was used all over the graves. He saw this as well.
It wasn't just party supplies. It was someone was living there kind of supplies.
Messily.
So someone's little pile of trash that they called home.
Yeah. And that offended me deeply because I find all grave sites sacred for obvious and my various personal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And
as Alex so well documented, many people feel that way here in Santa Cruz. During the protests last April that Alex photographed, many of those banners had expressed sympathy or concern for burial sites and stating that all burial sites are sacred, all cemeteries are sacred,
yes.
Words to that effect. They're there on Facebook.
Ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a documenting of the Ohlone, the fight to have the Ohlone burial ground saved from a what was the company that was going after it?
I'm not sure. I wasn't following that case that closely at the time, but
We agree, and it's a burial site, no matter whose it is.
It belongs to the dead.
And when they found that they were going to continue construction over it, that's rather horrifying.
Absolutely.
And I think that the protests were able to either stop that or slow it.
Good.
I don't know. And Alex DeRosi, the photographer who had this debate with you on the Facebook page that I'm looking at now, I guess the Facebook is...
Right, on Santa Cruz Political Roundtable page.
Santa Cruz Politico's a / permalink, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it's... The way it went, Alex DeRosi responded to you, and I invited him to call the show, as I mentioned before. By the way, we're talking with Van here and Elisa, for those who just tuned in, and you're tuned into Free Radio at 101.3 FM. Call-in number if you want to call in, and I think...
Assuming your phone is plugged in.
Phone lines are plugged in, and the ringer is on, so I hopefully will hear you. If any of you see some blinking happening here,
I won't shoot.
I will hopefully answer that phone. Alex responded to this and at least his on Facebook. He said, I wonder how much less garbage there would be near the river if more people in society took the problem of homelessness seriously.
Well, start from the top. Go ahead and read the very beginning.
Oh, I did,
read my inflammatory verbiage.
Right. Your initial comment was, I thought I read it, maybe not. I wonder what portion of the trash came from homeless campers living along the river.
Right, okay.
You're right. Homeless people hater.
And and Alex said, it would be less garbage there would be near the river if he wonders if more people in society took the problem of homelessness seriously. I'm going to read your comment in a moment, but do you agree with that comment in terms of, do you think that some of this trash, and maybe not at this campsite, but at various other campsites, may be a function of lack of public bathrooms, lack of dumpster pickups, police harassment that drives people into concealed campsites, and also makes people, I think, some more disrespectful of the law, since the law criminalizes something they have to do, which is sleep or survive. What's your thought about that, Ben?
Well, what he was expressing there, I believe, was concern for the seriousness of the homeless situation here, which is more vague. If he addressed specifically homeless repression, people being driven into the forest to go live in secret spots, well, that's one thing. But if your trash is still flowing out into the river, then you are still responsible for that. If I lived in a location where when the rain comes through, my trash washes out of my kitchen into the river or into someone else's yard, I would take responsibility for that. I wouldn't look to blame other people for my situation for that specific point. Now, the homeless people living in the forest, I have no problem with that. I have a problem with the SCPD recently raiding those sites. They're trying to stay out of your way. If they're trashing the place, okay, that's a problem. But if they're just staying out of your way, that's fine. If it's on public land, they have a right to use it like anyone else.
Unfortunately, they have no rights in the city limits of Santa Cruz because camping, as you know, is illegal.
They don't
have sleeping after 11 o'clock.
Yeah, they don't have the civil rights here, unfortunately, but they have the human right, and that's what all civil rights are meant to reflect.
So you and Alex probably agree on that issue.
Probably.
I think so. You then responded, that's some amazing powers of blame deflection you have there, Alex. Next time I see some homeless campers trash in the cemetery, I'll try to remember that it's somehow my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you getting a little sensitive here,
now,
man?
Now, am I? Because he seems to agree with that assessment in his next comment.
And Alex says, well, I think he's getting a little more sensitive, too. I think you're both getting a little, you know, you're both essentially on the same side. I think Alex probably agrees cemetery should not be defiled. And I think both of you think that because of his previous work. You pointed it out. But what do you think, Elisa?
Oh, I just wanted to interject one little thing.
Yeah.
He actually exposes later on, I can't cite the comment, of course, because
we'll
I wasn't paying close attention to this, but he exposes later on that he values the living situation and the plight of the homeless, which I am not negating as completely important as well, but he values that a lot more than the protection of historical sites and property of the dead. So,
well, we should say that this comes after we learn that you took militant action later in the day, and that was your... Mm-hmm. Why don't you say what you did?
Oh.
If you want.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Happily. And by the way, I just want to state that this is not... I would have done the exact same thing had these not been survival supplies, had they been party supplies for, you know, kids, whatever. It was trash in a cemetery, and it was irresponsibly strewn all over the place. So I destroyed their property because it was all over and just basically... It wasn't just their property. They were using these graves as restrooms and everything. So I destroyed their stuff in hopes that it would deter their return there. And if they were to return to that area, they would know to at least be neat about it and not absolutely 120% disrespectful.
And this isn't the first time we've encountered a trash site in a cemetery. We tend to frequent them. It's our aesthetic. We like it there. And we like the company.
Yes.
But where everyone, if they look, can find these trash sites. That's why the Take Back Santa Cruz people, who I do have a lot of disagreement with, have been going and cleaning up cemeteries, and the pictures they've taken are horrifying.
Well, so you not only destroyed trash, but you also destroyed homeless survival gear like sleeping bags. Is that correct?
I did.
It was part of the trash at that point. It may have been useful to them, but it was part of the trashiness and the desecration of the space.
Were these unusable bags, or were they?
They were once we were done with them.
Yes, once I was done with them.
And what exactly did you do to these bags?
Well, I tried lighting them on fire beforehand, but it was a damp day.
You need a permit to light bags on fire.
They burn just fine normally.
I wasn't. But yeah, that day apparently you needed a nature permit because it was too damp. So I was having a little trouble getting rid of their crap, basically, and so
which we've done before, actually, cleaned up these spaces, taken all the trash to the trash can, and simply cleaned them up. I mean, we've picked up trash at the beaches, we've picked up trash.
I only clean cemeteries.
I see.
But, yeah, beaches, cemeteries, and the part of the problem with cleaning up the cemeteries is that we seem to be providing a free maid service for these people, and that's it. We're not actually solving the problem.
Now, by these people, you mean...
The people who are leaving this trash, whether or not they're homeless, actually, like Lisa said, isn't really important to us. We assume they're homeless because it looks like they're living there, but if they're just suburbanite kids who like to go play at being homeless or like to play camp out in the cemetery, I don't know. I don't care why it's there. They've left it there, and so we wanted to discourage that.
Okay, I'm going to read some more of this, but my temporary reaction is to say I don't think that destroying their sleeping bags and such is going to discourage, unless you left maybe a long note explaining what you were doing.
A short note was left one time.
Yes.
What was the note? What did the note say?
It was yours.
I can't remember word for word what it said because this was a while ago. But
so this isn't your first, search and destroy operation?
No, and I've search and destroyed, so to speak, lots of people's crap in cemeteries, like I said, not just homeless people's stuff, because it's circumstantial. It's not that they're homeless at all. And I before the show started, I'd mentioned to you privately that I grew up hanging out with a lot of the gutter punks of Santa Cruz, and a lot of them were homeless, and yet they stayed out of everyone's business. They did not desecrate burial sites. They didn't, leave messes everywhere. So this is just a personal thing. These people were slobs. It's not that they were affected. It's not that they were homeless. I have absolutely no ill feelings towards the homeless. That's absurd. But I have ill feelings towards slobs who disrespect burial sites.
And the ironic thing, too, is the homeless, as you've often observed, and many have, and I agree with this, are among the most vulnerable and among the weakest in society.
Yes.
The ironic thing there is that here you have the weakest and most vulnerable of society abusing people who are even weaker and more vulnerable than they are, the dead. If you don't believe the dead are there, that's your choice, but that doesn't make them go away. They're still there, and if you go there and listen closely enough, you can feel them there. You can even hear them there if you piss them off, and you can even feel their gratitude if you clean up their sites. They are with us.
Most definitely.
And again, I think the problem, this comes in later in this dialogue, which I'll be reading a little more of, although I may be running short on time, is that if you had not used the word homeless, but you instead had said the slobs, the bums, the scumbags, whoever they were, homeless or not, who did this, I don't think there would have been any controversy at all. Mm-hmm. But generically blaming the homeless for this, when what you really mean is a much smaller subsection, I think, of a population.
I mean these homeless, not because they're homeless, though.
Exactly.
And when you see a pile of trash in a cemetery, the question is, if you're trying to identify the source and the cause, is this just party litter? Is this just tourists, leaving a soda can behind? Or is this a homeless campsite? When you see living supplies and a large quantity of it and sleeping bags, then you know it's a homeless campsite.
Yeah, it's easy to differentiate.
That doesn't make it the salient fact. It's just an observation at that point.
And of course, it helps to identify then the segment of the population that is the cause of this.
Well, it depends also. I mean, it could, for example, be, I'm being very speculative, that the campsite was a mess, and a couple of guys who knew nothing about it came there and put down their sleeping bags afterward and lay down there. You know, and, you know, I, know, I have no idea if that's likely. I wasn't present when this happened.
The survival living supplies and the mess looked well integrated.
It was well used, and it was. They've been there for a while, and it's regardless, they were trashing another person's space, and that's that dead. Those are the so dead people.
We've also noticed if you throw their things away in the trash can, they just go and fish them back out. It doesn't solve the problem.
That's exactly why I destroyed it, to completely deter them to the largest degree that I could that day.
So you know beyond a doubt that whoever owned the sleeping bag also made the trash.
Yes.
We do not know beyond a doubt. We're comfortable with that conclusion, however.
Okay. I'll
take my chances
with
you. I appreciate your clarifying that.
I'm as positive as I absolutely can be, and I'm pretty damn positive about that.
I would say beyond a reasonable doubt.
I mean, everything was, as you said, very well integrated. It was all in the same exact spot.
I doubt you could prove it in court in that way. But I hear what you're saying.
We can't hardly defend the Constitution in court anymore.
Yeah, well, that's another issue. But an important one.
Another issue.
But continuing very quickly, because I have about 9 minutes left here before I have to put on this video, although I suppose I could push it a little bit. Alex Rose said, I wonder how much less garbage there would be near the river, he says, if more people in society took up the problem of homelessness seriously.
Yeah, now that's a utilitarian argument. Yes, we could all open our hearts and our homes and our wallets and solve this problem. But if we choose not to, I don't think that's grounds for then blaming us for having failed in some way or holding us responsible for what are still the mistakes of others.
Well, I think that one needn't open one's hearts and one's wallet, only be advised that criminalizing people for engaging in survival behavior rather than littering or despoiling a gravesite is not and should not be a crime. In fact, it's a need, and that you don't have to be giving people a lot of goods or services in order to acknowledge that basic fact. I think we all acknowledge that, including Alex.
I was supporting your opposition of the sleeping ban back when it was brand new in the indie media days.
15 or 20 years old, but nonetheless,
yeah, that's ridiculous. The homeless around here get abused plenty by the legislature here, by the city council here, by the Santa
pigs.
Cruz, the Santa Cruz PD, the fucking pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I recognize that absolutely, and I have no problem with them sleeping wherever they can if it's out of the people's way. And
at last, could this be Alex?
Could it be Alex?
It could be. I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, I hope so.
Hi, you are on free radio.
Hi. I can't keep quiet any longer. Who are these people who have appointed themselves judge and jury over people they don't know?
Well, they are.
I'm Van. Hi, how you doing?
I'm Elisa. Nice to meet you.
That's who we are.
Who made you? Who appointed you? The person. You sound delusional, and you practice hate crimes.
Do I need permission from anyone to act upon my feelings?
Yeah. If people act upon their feelings and wipe out a bunch of kids.
Because I killed a bunch of
feelings. No, I think that you're saying, caller, that if you act on, it depends on the feelings you act on. There's some feelings if you act upon that produces, that destroys people. And I guess you're saying, caller, correct me if I'm wrong, that they're acting on their, or Elisa's acting on her feelings, and Van, you may have taken a hand in this, mm-hmm. it's possible.
Definitely. But I wouldn't say it was acting on feelings.
Destroys survival gear of homeless people, and may impact
them. Who appointed me? No one.
I have a question for the caller.
You sounded like you were smirking.
Oh, I've been smirking constantly.
I've been smirking.
Yeah,
I've been
whole time, like it's a big joke.
I actually have a question. Who appointed those people to create a mess and destroy the area of belonging of these dead people?
You don't know who did it. You don't know the details of what was going on. You don't know if the cops didn't just place all that shit there.
Well, if the cops placed it all there, then we only destroyed the property that the cops had placed there. And who this belonged to doesn't really matter.
Exactly.
The fact that it was there and the mess and the damage that it did and it created, that's what we addressed. We didn't go find some random homeless people and say, hey, I bet that sleeping bag was yours. We're going to punish you now for it. It was the property that was cleaned up.
Do you know what survival gear means?
Sorry, what?
Do you know what survival gear means.
Do you know what desecration means?
That's really far out there.
Survival gear means a sleeping bag that I would use out in the forest or alongside the river or somewhere else where I'm out of the way and not doing damage to nature and to rituals.
Personal property.
I know, I understand. That's your stand as far as what you would do. But you don't know the circumstances of the whoever.
It doesn't matter. They desecrated the gravesite.
I'm not concerned with the circumstances why they're in the cemetery. They don't belong there.
It's not their space, it's the dead space. End of story.
I think cemeteries should be respected, photographed. You know, I don't have any desires to do any, even trash, you know, putting trash on the ground. I wouldn't do that. But that's my way.
That's good.
You know, it really amounts to there's nobody there.
There were, however, there were people trashing the cemetery,
you know,
and that's what I was addressing.
There was nobody residing.
Spend some time in cemeteries at night listening, and you'll find out that there are people there.
One at a time. Let me interrupt you and the caller. Perhaps the caller's point is that had there been a campsite there with people there, you're actually doing this might have had more of a clear message and impact on those particular people, or you could have questioned them and saying, is this your mess, or did you come in the middle of the night in a stupor and lay down? You also mentioned, by the way, I think you saw packets that you thought were meth packets in different places.
Some form of, heroin or meth, whatever, it was in little dime bag packets. The telltale little tiny ones are about the size of a quarter.
Although that doesn't matter to me personally.
Because you're not, you don't favor the drug.
No, we don't condemn them for using drugs. Seriously, we don't condemn anyone for using any form of drug.
Not at all,
Just clean up after yourself.
What's your thought about that, caller?
Oh, I can't take any more. I've had enough.
Yeah, neither can we. That's why we started doing
this. No, I can't take any more of this attitude.
The attitude of defending the weak and the helpless? The attitude of helping to clean up damage that's been done by people?
To basically restore.
Have you ever checked out a corpse?
Check out what? I'm sorry, caller.
A corpse.
Yes. Yes, I've been around many corpses, in fact. Yes,
really?
I have.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Well, caller, let me see if I can clarify your point. Your point is you are outraged that these two destroyed survival gear of what may well have been a homeless person, was likely a homeless person, and that this is much more important than, you know, acting on feelings of rage about the desecration of a cemetery. It was inappropriate to destroy the property of a homeless person.
Well,
is that your point?
Yeah.
She's also asserting that there is no other victim there and that the dead aren't present and don't use these spaces.
Right. I must interject.
I'm certain that there are just, you know, remnants.
So the difference about what the nature of a cemetery is and who's there. Lisa, you wanted to say something?
I just wanted to say, basically, cemeteries, they are personal property of the dead.
No,
arguably
the
also,
property of
excuse
the
me, excuse me, also personal property of the living family, but most importantly, property of the dead. They were the initiators. These people whose property I got rid of were the initiators of the desecration and trashing of personal property. So therefore, I stand behind my actions 110%.
You still there, caller?
Wherever you want, you know. I think you're fucked up.
Well, fair enough. Sounds like there's a difference of opinion here, a serious difference of opinion. And is there anything else you want to say, caller, before you...
Nope.
Yeah? Okay.
Have a good evening.
Hey. Mm-hmm. Thank you, caller. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Wow, now the call. I think we're going to postpone the Santa Cruz 11 DVD audio track for at least probably 15 minutes to half an hour. So of all you calling in listening for that, that's the story at the moment. Hi, you're on Free Radio with the homeless property destroyers in the studio. Go ahead.
Only in cemeteries.
Only in cemeteries.
Hi, my name is Jerry. I work with the homeless down here in Ojai, California.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a regular listener. I love the work that you're doing, Robert. And I got to say that it's an insult that these smarmy young folks would place the welfare of the dead above the welfare of the living. Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
Priorities. It's a personal preference.
Pretty much, caller. I guess
I think he hung up.
First of all, young. I've got as much gray hair here as Robert.
He's very distinguished and younger than I am.
And thank you. It's nice to hear that I sound young. It's a compliment.
But more importantly, the living have plenty of space. They can go camp in. The publicly held forests here are immense. The beaches, I mean, anywhere you want to go. How big are the cemeteries? When you're a dead person, all the space you have left in this entire world is about 3 feet wide by 7 feet wide. That's all you've got left. The cemeteries can be left for the dead. Go to the forest 100 yards away.
Thank you. And more importantly, the dead cannot defend themselves. That's exactly why I do the work I do. And that's exactly why Van helps me do the work I do. It's because the living can defend themselves.
Or here's another idea. If I were living in homeless in a cemetery, I would go there with my gear, my suitcase, all my stuff, my sleeping bag. I'd roll it out. I'd sleep there. I'd pack up my stuff in the morning, and I'd leave, and you'd never know I was there except for maybe the fact that it's cleaner than when I got there.
We have another caller. You're on Free Radio with Elisa, Van, and Robert. Go ahead, caller.
Hi.
Hi.
Am I on?
You are.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Patrick Lancelin.
Hey, Patrick. I haven't heard from you for a while.
I don't want to be interrupted about what I'm about to say.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, kids, for cleaning that up.
Of course.
At the graveyard. Let me clear something up. There's an O-Lone grave that was dug up by K.B. Holmes from Las Vegas. They were digging up, and they dug up an O-Lone baby. Over there on the knoll. That was the place where the occupiers were supposed to go. The place is fenced off. It's a place that the O-Lone people used to go upriver in the winter. So that would have been a good place to go on 1116.
1116? What do you mean?
1116, 11?
What do you mean, Carr?
The occupiers had to move because of the trash that was accumulating.
The occupier, you mean Occupy Santa Cruz group?
Yes.
They had to move on the 8th of December is when they were cleared out of the Santa Cruz, San Lorenzo Park, but
the
last year.
The opportunity came on 11-16-11 to move.
Right, there was a demand by the city that they move, and
right,
I remember that.
Let's just move on to the details.
Sure, go ahead.
Talking about water under the bridge, I'm not finished.
Yeah, go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah. So, the city. I went up there and walked there with a lot of Indian people that came through on a long walk. They came through Santa Cruz. They went up there, and there's a place where the baby was dug up, and they fenced it off. And they dug everything down, like 10 feet straight down, to put in the houses there. And they fenced it all off. And it's wrong, and the baby was crying later in a dream that it had been separated from the dirt and the tribe in the dirt that was moved away from the site.
This was in your dream, caller, or whose dream was it?
It's in the Occupy dream.
Not sure what you mean, but you know, let me ask you. It sounds
No, I'm not done. No.
Well, you almost are done, caller. I'm running the show. You're not.
Got
to be real clear about that, caller. I'm running this one, not in this case.
Okay.
So,
well, I'm going to put something on the video, and then you can.
I'm getting a smile here from Van.
Robert,
Whatever, caller.
Right,
caller.
You let me finish, or I'll do it.
Well, no, threats will not move me.
You're
but what is it you want to?
Your trial,
Patrick,
I'm so confused.
Patrick, what is it you want to say? Go ahead.
Interrupt me. I told you not to interrupt me.
I will interrupt you if I feel it's appropriate. But go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yes.
I do not want to be interrupted. Is that clear?
Sorry.
Clear?
No. Say what you need to say, and then I'm going to move on. What is it you want to say? Quickly, please. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for calling in. You know, I'm sorry that you felt you couldn't finish. This is a show that I have to somehow kind of contain within certain parameters, and that's what I got to do.
You Nazi bastard, not letting him have his 2 minutes.
Well, I think he did have 2 minutes, actually.
He should sue you.
I'm still confused.
Yeah. So I think he was trying to say, was he talking about the Branca 40 site?
He was talking, I believe, about the site where there were the Ohlones protested, the you know, the developers digging up remains.
Right.
Of,
I, wish,
you know,
I wish I had been involved in that, but I hadn't known until
right.
Recently.
But, I mean, this is to me somewhat different order of magnitude is when people are actually digging into graves.
It's even worse, yeah.
You know,
worse.
But I think it's also true, and you know, in terms of. To me, it's not despoiling a grave as it is for you two. It is the general problem of the kind of trash that is left around, which I think discourages the community and discourages other people from using the area, and also involves prejudice against homeless people. I think that's a real that produces a real problem.
I think there's also a lot of fear of prejudice against the homeless, even though prejudice against the homeless is certainly common enough here in Santa Cruz. Although a lot of the homeless are really ill-behaved, you have to admit.
Or at least
a lot of the homeless people with homes are ill-behaved around here.
The ones that we encounter down on Pacific Avenue, I mean, the obnoxious, I assume they're homeless. You know what, they may not be, actually, that may be unfair. They may just be obnoxious bums.
Well, again, this is I guess I don't have the same experience you do down on Pacific Avenue. It could be because I know some of the people down there, and so I have more of a... Although on some days...
And they know you.
On, and they know me. And some days this may be less so than on other days where I am, you know, feeling a more, you know, like I want to be by myself. I don't want anybody to talk to me. You know, I don't want to be asked for spare change if that happens. But
although if they ask politely, well, there's no harm
in that. Yeah, there's
not
ever.
It's fine,
no,
whatever.
Not.
They can ask,
right? And you know, and I think that's appropriate. But I think it's also realistic to realize that at a certain point, people may no longer be polite, provided they're not being directly abusive. I find myself in a position where I, you know, you got to realize you got to have a certain amount of this is not you know a pastoral scene. We're in an urban environment. People are treated badly, and they tend to respond that way, even if you didn't treat them badly. And that doesn't mean you have to tolerate any shit. No way.
But it's understandable.
But it's understandable, and I wouldn't say that means that's a good reason to criminalize them.
Oh,
and you're
no.
not saying that. I know.
No, absolutely not.
But what you say can lead to that. That's the next step for a lot of people.
Leading to, what does that mean?
In other words, we need the downtown ordinances because, you know.
I've never said that. I've opposed those damn things in the beginning.
We're both
so we say it can lead
that.
To that. Well, people who support the downtown ordinances may then, you know, promote them or pass them or enforce them. That's on them. That's the responsibility. That should be laid entirely on their shoulders.
Yeah.
What you vote for, you're responsible for, essentially. That's what it comes down to.
I would like to get back to one point that crazy guy there did make.
Patrick. Yeah. Patrick is a passionate person, and he's had his ups and downs, and I've known him for many years. I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to be rude when I interrupt him. I'm trying to control the show in a way that I think is productive.
Of course.
And thank you. Just got another one of those Nazi salutes.
That's special for Robert.
I appreciate that. It's a way of recognizing my peers.
He mentioned something about someone had a dream of a Ohlone baby crying for having been separated from the rest of their tribe with whom they've been buried.
That caught my attention.
Now, I don't know if that was his dream or someone else's dream. I don't know if...
He said it was the Occupy dream. This is straying from my subject matter.
Well, actually, I can bring it back to the subject matter.
Okay.
Whether or not that dream was real, if that was someone's dream or not, that is one way that people often do receive communication from these dead people that so many don't believe in anymore.
Most definitely.
You don't have to be some kind of clairvoyant to go out and speak to the dead and hear the dead. You can actually just go to a cemetery, find where you find that creepy feeling of you're not alone, and then address them not as a spirit or a ghost, but as a human being, because that's what we are. We're human beings with bodies. We're not human beings with spirits. We're human beings, and we're still human beings even after we're gone. You can go there, just talk to them like they're there, treat them like they're decent people, and treat them like they have a little or deserve a little bit of respect and courtesy. And often you will find that when you're asleep, when your mind that talks too much to you all the time shuts down and lets you actually hear, you'll find that they say things to you, that they'll come and visit you, that they'll say thank you. Or if you did something that offended them, you'll find out that they're a little pissy at
you. All that you have to do is pay attention, and it's quite obvious if you do.
So I think he may have been right. I don't know where he got that story from, but that story might be legitimate.
Yeah, it sounds like...
It's plausible in my mind.
I'm not saying it wasn't legitimate. I'm trying to get back to the the dialogue and the discussion here. And I think it's interesting what you say, and I encourage people to call in at 427-3772 if they have any thoughts. Again, the issue for me is often I think activists who fundamentally share some really basic ideas can get lost and get into kind of hostile interactions, which I don't think... I regret seeing that. But, you know, I understand people have genuine differences of opinion, and sometimes these are passionate and real. And
I don't really mind, as you know, getting into arguments and fights with people. I think it's one of the best ways for us to hopefully test out our ideas, see if our logic really makes sense, let other people test it for weaknesses. But it's all just bullshit and nonsense on Facebook. What really matters is what you actually go out at the end of the day or the middle of the night and go do to try and make the world a better place as you think it ought to be a better place. What do you actually do
That's
to promote
true.
Your cause?
That's certainly
exactly.
true.
Yeah, arguing on Facebook and two activists not getting along, who cares?
Does nothing.
Well, here I am reading more of the Facebook irrelevancies. And you know, and that's true. I mean, in fact...
Alex and I don't get along. Fine, whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't clean up the cemeteries that need to be cleaned, so who cares?
And, of course, the for those who are interested in that, I believe the clean team is engaging in, I don't know if it's cemetery cleanup, but certainly riverfront cleanup and Poganip cleanup, maybe beach cleanup. If you want to get involved in that, you can go to the clean team. You can start your own group. And I've been often castigated for not telling homeless people that may listen to my show or those who know homeless people to encourage them to camp more lightly on the land, to pack their trash. Most of my admonitions are for the authorities, who could really encourage this a lot more by providing dumpsters, by providing garbage bags, by providing porta potties, and by providing safe places to go and lack of harassment, or allowing public spaces to be public spaces. And that is usually my focus because... You know, I kind of feel like a nanny telling people to clean up their shit. Although, you know, I mean, I have trouble cleaning up my shit, and I live in a room, you know.
But it's your room.
It is my room. It's true.
Exactly.
But the problem is homeless people don't have a room. So they are wherever the hell they happen to be.
Well, if they're homeless, but if they want to use public land, I'm fine with that. I actually have no philosophical objection to them camping out in the forest. Even city parks, if they're paying taxes at some point in their life, they have some right to use city parks.
But the basic issue for me is, and in fact, I've heard it proposed by another sometime outspoken activist named John Golder. He proposed a change in the sleeping ban to say people will not be ticketed for sleeping, but they'll only be ticketed if they are found within a 15-foot radius of trash of any kind. If people come upon. So in other words, you have to make sure your area is well policed before you lay out your sleeping bag. You have to clean it up, and that is a way of, you know, I think addressing this the real aspect of this problem, one real aspect of it, which is littering and just spoiling the environment.
It's a nice theory to say we'll take whoever's within 15 feet and we'll blame them for that trash. You might be right. You might have the right person. You might be wrong. Maybe there's a group of people.
That's the reason you can't use the current littering laws. That's why you would make it a specific law that whether or not it's yours, if you put down your sleeping bag and you want to sleep there, you have to clean it up. That could be an interesting, I think, approach. Yeah. And I think, I commend Golder for proposing that. And I've actually presented it, to city council members, and of course they've ignored it. But I think it's, you know, an idea. No city that I know of has proposed such a law. I think I did hear from someone that there were constitutional objections to that kind of thing. But I still think it's worth investigating, an idea worth investigating. You know, we may have exhausted this Facebook approach, because I think your point is really more valid than my prurient interest in seeing, exciting radio, people's tempers flaring off, people getting mad at each other.
If Alex would call, we could get that.
Yeah, I know. I feel lonely. Or even, for me, it's contrasting views being shown. But as you said, I think you are both, maybe you clean up grave sites and you speak out on issues.
We have done so, yes.
But Alex is also, as you know, a person who also speaks out a great deal on issues.
I don't know, but I'm perfectly willing to believe that.
With this camera, if you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, you'll find his coverage of numerous issues, including strikes, including the Santa Cruz 11, including the homeless campsites, which I think is very brave, very well documented. He also is a passionate person who has his own approach. And we have another Hey, man. This is rare, and I appreciate it. Caller. Hi there, caller. Thank you for calling in. You're on Free Radio.
Thanks.
Patrick?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you have a delay there, huh?
No, there's no delay. You have to turn down your radio. It's, you know, I don't delay. There's nothing I can do about that. But there is the studio transmitter delays. But if you want, turn down your radio and you can actually hear, you know, immediately in real time what's cooking.
All right. Is it live now?
You are live. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I really wanted to finish that story, but I'm so upset with you.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Go ahead. I hear you, Patrick. Go ahead.
I make it a point never to call, and that it's so important that I should have said this to everyone, and now I just don't think that I can put it out the way it should have came out. So I'm going to save it for another time, but I'd like to have access to the radio sometime and have my own show, maybe an hour, to let people know exactly what happened and let them decide for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Those people that are cleaning up the grave sites are being called there to do that. It's supposed to be done. It shows respect for the entire world. This is the most important thing. Things have to be righted on these things, you know, and to talk about and fight with each other about common things that everyone has to do is totally a waste of time. And I'm really discouraged, actually, so I'll just leave it at that. And I was going to put a video on, but I'm not going to do that. I'll do it after your trial.
Okay.
We'll see how it is, how it comes out. Always disintegrates from within. Those people should get help. Everybody should go help them. That way the community would see unity and have to give something back. Anyway, good luck.
Patrick, before you go, do you want to hear a response from Van or Elisa on that?
No, I'm really choked up. No problem. The baby is there. The baby needs to be reconnected with the rest of the tribe.
Can you move
the dirt to the bad place? Maybe they moved. Where did they put the dirt that they took from there?
Actually, can you specify where that baby was found? We're actually interested in this.
Yeah, we are.
A guy named Ryan Coonerty is involved in this thing. He did a deal with the Las Vegas people to hush the Santa Cruz people that are upset about it. It's not just Santa Cruz. The whole world is out of kilter because of this. The West Coast is going to have an earthquake because of this. Everything's going wrong because of this. People are killing each other on the streets because of this. People are going crazy because of this.
It's all in the details.
But if everyone comes together, works together, you know, you know that big rock that almost hit us, it could have been the end, but maybe there's a chance. I don't know. Honestly, I'm way discouraged. But good luck. Keep up the good work and try to work together. And, you know, we're all on the
Thank
planet.
You, Patrick.
There is no such thing as homelessness or none of that. It doesn't exist, really.
Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate the call. And, you know, feel free to call in again if you wish.
I'm never going to do this again.
And start that radio show of yours that you want.
I don't even want a show anymore. It's like discouraged with the entire... Everybody's got an opinion. They can't come together to work together like a village.
That's content,
to make it
though.
Right. Not everybody loves Santa Cruz. Yeah. What is going on?
Forgive me, Patrick. Without trying to be disrespectful, I got to move on.
You always have to move on. See, you went to the...
I do.
You sued the
That's
government
true.
For the... You did to me what they did to you. You say... You went all the way with that, and then you do it to
I'm
others
giving
all
you some time.
Robert,
I'm giving you some time.
With you, but I'm not going to bring it up now.
We'll talk again. Bye bye. And you know, I have to go sometime, and I do have other things I want to put on the show.
He'll make a good DJ. He talks a lot.
Patrick is a very articulate guy. He's done a lot of work in the past, and he was a strong activist at Occupy Santa Cruz, although a controversial one in some quarters, too. But that's fine.
Good for him.
Yeah, for sure.
We know nothing of controversy.
So, yeah, I know. You two are just very boring.
So vanilla.
You know, you never get involved.
We'll take pictures next time.
yeah, well, you know, so I think we've kind of... We don't have, you know, the others. Well, we did have the other side of it. We did have a couple callers who are critical of your approach. And I think the main criticism of your approach is that, and that the content is fundamentally, the living are more important than the dead. And that's really an issue which I probably agree with them on that. I'm not sensitive, as Patrick apparently is, as you are, to graves and people who've gone in that way.
And I don't even disagree that the living are more important than the dead. The living certainly have more of a presence here in the real, or the physical world.
Yeah.
But the dead have so little space left to them, there's plenty more where the living can go.
They need representatives.
Yeah, and even if I were to agree with that, which may well be true, you know, I mean, I don't know, I guess, you know, I have a sympathy for the caller who was saying, the woman who was calling in who said that, you know, how do you know for sure that this is, you know, and it's this a particular person who, you know, and it could well have been a homeless person. You said you made a reasonable decision.
Right.
I don't deny
basically
that.
Basically, we punish the owner of that property, whoever that owner is.
Regardless.
And we don't really need to know or care who they are or what their situation in life is. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that left that property there. They presumably had an interest in this property.
The property being the survival gear and the sleeping bag.
The things that were left behind that they would actually want to preserve. Because if we take out their trash, they're probably grateful that we took out their trash.
Exactly. And then they'll just continue.
But when they leave valuables there, that's our opportunity to teach them a lesson and discourage them from doing this in the future. And it is very vigilante, I admit.
It is, yes.
See, that's my, not so much as vigilante. I mean, though I've got some criticisms of certain kinds of vigilantism, I've got some praise for other kinds of vigilantism. Mm-hmm. So it's more that I don't think your message gets across really clearly unless the person is there, first of all.
But when they come back.
And I think a different message comes out to those who are watching who may think it's perfectly okay to despoil people, homeless people's property because they're ruining the environment where environment in this case takes in the dead, those who want to use the forest, anybody around. So that's the problem. But, you know, we've all said this. You wanted to say something else, Alyssa?
Oh, I just really quickly on that. I had just a quick example of I have actually approached people that were there before who were making a mess, and I stopped it from happening because they had the reason and presence of mind to come down the hill after I threatened, you know, you guys better. These were some obviously middle class kids. I you know, said to them, you know, clean your stuff, otherwise I will return these cans to the rightful owner. Anally, and they were there, and they responded well to that. So it's not a matter of I'm a coward.
Stick the cans up their ass or anything.
Something. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm small, but those threats, you know, if you yell them up.
Feisty.
But honestly, though, I mean, it's not a matter of we do it behind people's backs because they're not there and it's safer and.
I didn't say you did it behind their backs. I just said I don't know if it's if it's effective in the way. It's certainly effective in expressing your rage and expressing your anger. But
as long as they learn that this is a dangerous place to keep the stuff they want to keep, then that serves the purpose of chasing them away.
Those people, but not the next three people. Not the next 10
people.
It'll
get a reputation because if they're part of the community that is the homeless community is looking for safe places to stay, obviously they speak to each other. They warn each other if, say, a given cemetery has become a dangerous place.
Do they know it's people who are not going to destroy their property elsewhere for other reasons? See, that's the question.
At first, no, but after a while, you'll see the pattern of, gee, this destruction only seems to happen in the cemeteries.
Also, as
people learn,
word of mouth, those kids are going to tell other kids that, you know, suggest to them, let's go party at Evergreen, that, no, there's some crazy chick who yells at you if you trash the place. So, no, I feel as if it is effective.
Especially if the story then gets told on the radio.
Well, we are telling the story on the radio, but again, this is not the most. We aren't an AM KSCO station. A little bit more about the dialogue that went on. You said, you're right, Alex. We need to take personal responsibility for the mistakes of others. You're being sarcastic.
Yes.
Always. The last time we found a filthy trash, this, is, of course, was the quote that I think set the tone. Trash-strewn homeless camp in Evergreen Cemetery in the center walkway right on top of one of the graves. I helped my girlfriend, that's you, take a knife to the sleeping bag and clothes, smashed at their smoking accessories, and generally destroyed every last thing of potential value to them. We left it that way. Normally, she picks up their trash and throws it away, but that just seemed to provide them, as you were saying, with a free maid service, picking up their empty meth dime baggies has proven to be an unsustainable solution. She went back later, and the bums had returned. They seemed very angry. Ah. Now, do you want to comment about what happened when they returned? Did you talk to them?
Initially, yes. This actually was two separate stories that Van accidentally mixed up because it happened within the same month. Uh-huh. And
at the same cemetery.
Yeah, same cemetery. I had a group cleanup effort. So there was a meetup of a bunch of people helping me with a group cleanup, and that time was the time that the homeless people had returned. And by the way, yeah, circumstantially homeless. These were just...
The campers.
Yeah, the campers, the people that trashed the place. And
you know that were the people who trashed the place because...
Because they were living there. They were...
Did they say, I was living there? Or what? How did you know they were living there?
As we were throwing the stuff away in the dumpster...
I said, don't do that, that's our stuff.
They chased us. They chased us and threw rocks at the car.
I see.
They were, yeah.
Somewhat
upset about
now,
it. So
they demonstrated a personal interest in that particular trash.
Perhaps they were upset that they thought you were just spoiling homeless property. But
might
you were
have
just
been.
One of the troll buster types.
Might
I knew
have been.
They were afraid
they
you were
and nothing that. Was done to those people.
No.
So. What do you mean nothing was...
Nothing was done in any retaliatory fashion to these two people who were chasing and throwing rocks.
Yeah, I mean, they were being...
These were two men who were throwing rocks? Or?
No, one was a woman and one was a man. And
did they say anything?
They were yelling all sorts of obscenities.
It would have been dangerous to let them get that close.
Yeah, we heard things throughout the window, but I didn't want to...
You
we just
beat a hasty retreat.
We did.
So as not to engage in a violent interaction.
No, we did not want to attend the shenanigans at that moment.
When a petite girl and her petite male friend are the only ones there, they're in a dangerous situation at that point.
Yeah.
They were bigger than you?
Oh, definitely. No one else from the group
you
was
you didn't have your gun
place.
With you, Van?
Well, it wasn't me.
Not that day.
Oh, okay. Somebody else, I see.
Yeah.
So, I've almost reached really the end of this because I want to play some of the Santa Cruz 11, the soundtrack from the DVD of the community TV show, which we do have a weekend of Santa Cruz 11 events kind of coming up, mostly on taxpayer money, where we're being dragged into court tomorrow at 8 o'clock. If you come, there'll be some hot coffee, probably right out front of the courthouse, probably on the steps, not where the Occupy usually is, but around the normal entrance.
What?
At 8
no
o'clock.
Tea?
There may be tea. If you come, we may bring tea bags. I have some tea at home.
Uh-oh, tea baggers are there. Watch out.
And it will be a tea party of a different kind. Although I've had some respect for some things the tea baggers are, when they're not being used by certain right-wing Republican groups, you know.
Good point.
I was one of the tea partiers before the Republicans actually infiltrated that group and took it to the right wing.
Ah.
That got one.
This could be John Boehner or Boyer, what the
brilliant.
Hell is that, calling in. You are on Free Radio with the Big Three.
Hello, Uncle Robert.
Hey there, David. What's up?
To let you guys know that I agree with you. You know, that was a hard phone call to handle that you handled, and you handled it with some grace and decency. These people sometimes are so mistreated and so abused that the fact that he's still fighting is still up is good. That's positive. You know, but if he gets irresponsible and a little, you know, starts flailing about a little too much, we have to let him know, hey, don't make that baby and child sleeping. The child needed to get nourished. And so forth and so on. So, whatever stuff it is.
Well, so, David, you're referring to the dialogue Patrick and I had?
Yes, I think you should handle that fine. Not to worry about
thank
it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not worried about it, but I do, you know, I do appreciate people contributing to the show, and I don't want to discourage them.
Yeah. Do you need his input?
Sorry?
You need everybody's input, actually, huh?
I welcome input generally. You know, I'm sure there are probably some exceptions, but you know, I try to be as inclusive as I can.
You are and have always been the penultimate diplomat, Robert.
Battles, yeah.
Diplomat? I don't know. Anyway, David, anything new to report from your neck of the woods other than this well-deserved praise for me?
I'm having... still a lot of struggling with you know, bureaucracy with housing authority, and the VASH and veterans program is helping to expedite stuff, but I'm still, you know, they managed to get me in debt and behind, and to everybody.
You're referring to
this month. I'm finally going to get ahead.
You're referring to the fact that the people that have been helping you have been veterans with the Veterans Assistance Program, and that you finally thought you were getting. You're proceeding to any announcements of upcoming events that people should know about in terms of veterans' rights that you want to pass on right now, or
I can't think of any right now. But you know, it seems really everywhere I go, I'm hearing of Veterans for Peace minute, and there's a lot of veterans declaring for the revolution and just letting people know that they are also at the same time experienced in violence, but they are basically pacifists, and I think that's the kind of revolution we're going to be having here. I think it's going to be a pacifist uprising, but at the same time, we're not going to be fools to be slaughtered, massacred, made.
Sounds like a difficult road to hoe there. We may have to ask Van about arming the homeless, which is one of the issues.
There's arming and there's arming, you know.
Yeah.
Just having a pick handle by your perimeter of your campsite is understandable.
The right to keep and bear arms never specified firearms. Any weapon you can arm yourself with for self-defense, by all means.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's always the power of the tongue, which I've been using endlessly.
If you can prove you've been defensive from the get-go, then they start the establishment starts contradicting itself. So, I think it's really hard for us to stay in continuity with our more pacifist revolutionary aspirations with the way the corruption is just so every day. Tar and feather, the sons of bitches ride them out of town on a rail, But, tarring and feathering is a dangerous proposition, but I think maybe tarring and feathering is due here.
It's the way to go, eh? I hope you're not referring to Bob Lee, our district attorney. He wouldn't like to hear that, David Silva.
Well, Bob, wake up.
Thanks, David. I'm going to roll.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. We have about 28 minutes left in the show before Uncle Dennis comes bullying his way into the studio for From the Cream to the Dregs, which is the show that follows this. I actually invited him to come in early, so he may come in to talk about some of these issues. I don't know if he's coming in tonight or not. He may have forgotten. Hopefully he has. Uh-oh. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Corruption is just so every day, tar and feather.
You need to turn down your radio. That's a very delayed. Turn it down.
Hey, listen, buddy, you're cutting me off, so I'm going to go ahead and air it. Okay, you tell Robert that.
So we have a. You're playing a bit of the earlier show here. Go ahead.
Yeah, you tell. I'm putting it up. I'm going to go ahead and testify in court, in federal court, against Robert the 11th. The whole thing. I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to put it up. You shouldn't have cut me off. People have the right to know. Is that clear?
I hear you. You're not being cut off now, but is there anything else you want to say?
You are playing with the radio and cutting ends of sentences off and cutting people off and stuff. And
I do cut people off.
Yes. I'm going to go forward with what I got you, Robert. You're toast. Dude, I warned you.
Okay, well, do what you need to do, caller. I'm not going to be intimidated or threatened, but if you want to, if you want to talk on the radio, you can. But
I'm coming to court, you son of a gun. It's your time to go now.
Okay, you take care.
Your time.
Wow, he's going to last long in court.
I don't know.
I want to go and watch the trial.
Freedom of speech doesn't mean you get a free radio station. Get your own.
And that's not me talking. Go after someone else for that.
That's that bastard Van.
That's a Van talking. Yeah, sorry, folks. I mean, it really, you get a certain amount of time, and you will get cut off to some extent, and I will interrupt you with questions, because that's what I do. And if this is you again, Patrick, we aren't going to talk for very long. I got to warn you. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
No, Robert, it's me, Uncle Dennis.
Hey, Uncle Dennis, I'm not going to let you talk for very long either. But what's
I didn't want to talk for very long. I just want to let you know that I was not planning on coming in early tonight.
Oh, okay. Well, it's both.
I got behind and so.
Okay. Well, maybe next week.
You can blather on for another 28 minutes.
Fair enough. Thank you. So, rather than blather on, I'm going to let this discussion of the Santa Cruz 11 blather on, and we can see how that goes. Um, And I want to thank our guests for coming. You're welcome to hang, and I may actually stop the Santa Cruz 11 tape, interrupt the very tape, because I do interruptions is really, you know, I mean, I do a lot of interrupting. I feel for a productive purpose, which is to make comments, to direct things towards specific questions, and that really is a part of my shtick.
MST3K.
Which means?
Mystery Science Theater 3000, interrupt to make sarcastic comments.
Heckle.
That can happen too, although I'm mostly trying to be very sincere. Or often I'm trying to be very sincere. But, you know, I do get sarcastic, I have to admit, and, you know, that's okay too.
You're one of those silly people who still tries to be well-liked.
Yeah.
That's, overrated.
That is for sure.
Entirely overrated.
I do try to be well-liked, and that is overrated. I agree. Now the question is, can I manipulate the equipment here so I can actually get something rolling?
Especially around here, it's overrated.
Well, you know, it's...
That's just me.
No, it's okay. So, again, you are welcome to call in. Those who are listening, 427-3772. The topics we've been covering include, controversies between those who are concerned with environmental despoilment, or in this case, very more specifically, cemetery despoilment, and others who are concerned say that homeless folks, those who are alive, have more of a claim on the space, even in such a place as a cemetery, and that's a difference of opinion here between folks. And let's see if I can begin this thing again.
And that would be why we need Camp Paradise back.
Or 15 of them, different camps.
For 15 of them, yeah. There's so much space out there to live in.
There is.
And I have to make sure that I know how to run this, and I'll be a really happy guy. I think, let's see here. Perhaps what we need is I threatened a musical break earlier in the show, and I never did it. So let's see if... Here we go. This is, again, an audio, and we're going to only play about 20 minutes of it, of the Santa Cruz... It's not just the Santa Cruz 11. It's about the First Amendment and Santa Cruz, and involved a number of people. You're going to hear the panelists describe. This was a TV show that was recorded at the beginning of December and aired a week or two ago, probably air again on community TV. But right now, we're going to play the audio of it, or a portion of it, and the rest of it I'll play on Sunday when I come back at 9:30, possibly with armed guards, who never or disarmed guards, as the case may be. Actually, the issue of guns, because of the recent shootings of the kids in school, has become an issue. Gun control, access to guns, effectiveness of controlling guns, dangers of controlling guns. All these have been issues, and heated ones in different localities. And to some extent, there have been really differences of opinion in Santa Cruz. I may invite my guests to come back again on Sunday and talk about that issue if they want. But in the meantime, I'm just going to thank them and tell them that we're going into this... DVD, and we may never come out. I will come out in about 20 minutes. Thank you, Van. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you very much, Robert.
And thanks to all the callers, including David and Patrick and the woman who called in and the guy who called in from Ojai. Thank you very much, man. I need callers because I'm lonely, and I appreciate that. However, it appears we may have some difficulties in the studio, so while we're working out those little technical problems that come up, let's hear a bit of Live Cursed, Seen Worse by the Curly Wolf, one of my favorite groups. Actually, I've liked them. I played them recently, and I've enjoyed them.
Now here's a drink.
And that was The Curly Wolf, as mentioned before. Now we're going to hear at least a brief bit of the, because we finally got the right chords plugged in, thanks to the technical expertise of one of our guests here. This is, again, from the early December, and we're going to hear a discussion of the First Amendment in Santa Cruz.
Hi, I'm Steve Plaich, and for the next hour, I'll be hosting what I believe to be a very interesting panel discussion about the state of the First Amendment in Santa Cruz. With me this evening are three attorneys who have worked for many years in the defense of civil rights and First Amendment protections in Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz County, and three of the defendants in one of our many court cases that are going on in terms of First Amendment freedom of speech and freedom of expression, and they'll be giving us their views on the First Amendment as well. I'd like to introduce first Kate Wells, attorney, Robert Norris, local activist, David Bavay, attorney.
Hello.
Local activist Becky Johnson.
Hello.
Attorney Eric Nelson.
Good evening.
And Linda LeMaster, local activist. So I'd like to start with Kate. Kate, just give us a kind of an overview of what you feel is the present state of the First Amendment here in Santa Cruz in terms of the litigation, in terms of the protection of people who are just simply wanting to express their First Amendment freedom of speech and freedom of assembly.
I would say that it's a pretty sorry state as we speak. Of course, I'm just coming off of a trial that I prepared for 10 years. It was a pure First Amendment case. I'm sure that many of you have heard about it, the Robert Norris's Nazi salute in a city council meeting, an action that caused absolutely no disruption. However, he was charged with disrupting the meeting and ordered to leave, and when he refused to leave, he was arrested. There's a videotape of the incident that's quite clear that there wasn't a disruption. So I'll use that case to kind of illustrate what I think is happening at this point in terms of our First Amendment rights. I'm going to quickly review an old story that I think is important, and it has to do with my son, who is now in his 30s, but this happened to him when he was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And my son was a very outspoken person, and also he thought outside the box. He was a buck the tide, for the most part, straight-A student. And suddenly we found ourselves in the midst of an expulsion hearing for a bunch of kind of ridiculous trumped-up charges, but it became obvious at the hearing that it was his speech that was the issue. And one after another of these school board members sitting up there on high, you know, were chastising him for his speech. He had some teachers there in support of him, but for the most part, the principal and everybody else was trying to get him expelled. And so it came to the very last person on the board, and they looked at my son. He's 16 years old. They looked at my son and they said, "What have you learned by this incident?" And my son paused for a moment and looked the man straight in the eye and said, "I've learned to keep my ideas to myself."
Oh my. Oh. Yeah.
And I literally wept at that meeting. And I think that it's really an illustration of how they have, public education has pigeonholed people into little compartments, and this was our jury.
Mm-hmm.
It was clearly our jury in this trial that all of these people were products of this educational system, all with graduate degrees, all very highly intelligent people, but did not have any clue as to the impact of curtailing our First Amendment rights. Interestingly enough, there were two jurors who held out for a couple of days, And they were the two jurors who were educated outside of the United States.
One had
his PhD from Cambridge, and the other woman as well. So I think that, you know, I guess I'd like to lead part of this discussion into a fact that, you know, we need to be instilling in our children a respect for the First Amendment, and also the encouragement to speak out, mm-hmm. and to push the envelope and to think outside the box,
yeah.
Because I don't think it's happening, and I think that that's one of the major problems we have.
And I think that's true. Robert, of course, you're a defendant in two cases, one the Santa Cruz Levin case arising from the 75 River Street occupation, and also, of course, the Nazi salute case that Kate alluded to. What have been your impressions of First Amendment rights as they have perhaps even eroded in Santa Cruz?
Well, you know, I do this radio show twice a week, which I've had you on, Steve, mm-hmm. before, and other people actually on this panel too, and I'm mostly concerned with the destruction of the survival rights of homeless people, but you can also see the erosion among middle class people. For instance, the two of us were discussing the Pruneyard decision's mm-hmm. erosion, which yeah. it used to be you could give out literature in shopping malls or in at least in the parking lots of shopping malls. Now, Trader Joe's will tell you to leave here in Santa Cruz, even if you're an ACLU canvasser. They actually arrested an ACLU canvasser. They dropped the charges before court, but they stopped people from doing that. On Pacific Avenue, you can't have a table for more than an hour. And they stopped Rene Curry, who gives away free food, which is perhaps not free speech in the purest sense, but in another sense, it is a service, and she also does other things with it. It's a religious activity. She was told by police last Sunday, when this is being filmed, today is the 2nd of December, that she had to move along, and she couldn't continue to do what she'd been doing for 2 years. So there seems to be a crackdown in Santa Cruz, specifically at the police level. People are being informed about that they don't have rights, that they should have, and the police know they have, around, and even in our libraries, homeless people who use libraries are now going to find themselves probably confronting much more restrictive regulations for behavior. Again, this is not all technically free speech.
Yeah.
You know, but the case you mentioned, which Kate was referring to, the issue of, you know, is this the basis for being thrown out of a city council meeting if somebody... City council members have been acting repressively, and you're trying to convey a quick signal. You don't act like that. You're acting like fascists. And people should be reassured. The courts have held, you can't be convicted for this. You can't be thrown out for this. But the real question is, can you get lawyers to defend you mm-hmm. once you get thrown yeah. out? And I don't know if anybody going to be as generous as David and Kate here yeah. in defending a next person yeah. who gets
And I
out.
Think one of the questions, of course, you mentioned, Ron A., that's as much her right to freedom of assemble and people to yeah. assemble downtown and people mm-hmm. to be able to have that
right.
kind of, you know, right to do that,
sure.
which seems to be abridged in Santa Cruz. David, you have been a longtime defender of civil rights and First Amendment rights, and of course you're not only defending co-defense counsel with Kate in the Nazi salute case, but also defending Robert and Santa Cruz 11 cases. What has been your observations in terms of First Amendment rights in Santa Cruz?
Well, I'm appalled by the current conditions, and I'm very afraid for the people of Santa Cruz if they step out of line and do anything that disturbs this extraordinarily strict sense of order, both at city council and in the streets. Now, the streets have always been designated as public fora where maximum First Amendment rights attach. But the issue at the city council meeting, which, as Kate said, is on video, it's on YouTube. All you have to do is type in Norse Nazi salute, and you can see what happened. And anybody I've ever showed that to has thought that was totally out of line to arrest him for that. Even the federal judges that heard this case in the Ninth Circuit, two of them filed an opinion in which they said all you had to do to know that Robert Norse's rights were violated was to watch that video. You didn't really need any more evidence to decide that his rights were violated. And yet,
we go to a jury trial in which we put on all kinds of witnesses to say that there was no disruption at that meeting. And a jury comes back, and there's two courageous jurors that stay as long as they possibly can, but eventually cave to the majority and find that his rights weren't violated. And that sends another signal. It tells the city, yeah, you can get away with it. Just keep doing this. Do whatever you want, because there's nothing to stop you. Lawsuits were the way to stop these things. When you couldn't get the prosecutors or the public agencies to step in and defend you, you could find a lawyer, if you were lucky, and go to court and have your rights vindicated in court. And that seems to be less and less likely as time goes on. Mm-hmm. But I do have a little bit of optimism that this will change, because in American history, we've gone through these sorts of oscillations before, where rights were really restricted, and then we had a period when it was more liberalized. And we just happened to be in a very repressive time, and I think we can date it right back to 9/11. I mean, since 9/11, the government has been grabbing power, taking it away from citizens. Everybody wants to be a good German these days, and I think that's what's happening.
Okay. Well, thank you, David. Becky Johnson, you've been a longtime advocate and activist in town, although you certainly don't look old enough to have been. But I think a lot of your experience has been with seeing downtown, with various kinds of activism downtown, and yet you've had experiences where you have those rights restricted and repressed in certain ways.
Well, I'd say I was sued by the city for coffee clutching, mm-hmm. which was a lobbying effort to get the sleeping ban put on the agenda for the city council. Mm-hmm. And so 6 months later, we won that case, mm-hmm. and had that restraining order thrown out as being without merit. But it did tie us up for 6 months and prevent us from being able to fully participate in our government activities. Then I was twice convicted for chalking on a sidewalk. Well, once actually in the gutter, wasn't on a sidewalk. And that was writing messages that, it was a case also selective enforcement where a whole lot of people were chalking, and I just happened to be the one that Julie Hendy of the Redevelopment Agency knew my name, and so I was the only one who was cited, and I ended up being convicted of that.
And now you've had the sing-song cases as well.
Convicted of unreasonably downtown, disturbing noise for singing downtown. For about 20 minutes mm-hmm. total in a free speech zone in the middle of the afternoon on Pacific Avenue mm-hmm. In unamplified sound. One would think that you couldn't be convicted of that, but I certainly was.
And now, more recently, of course, you're a defendant in the Santa Cruz Webbin cases.
And in that case, I was holding a sign outside of an action where some other people actually went and opened up a empty bank building and turned it into a community center for 3 days. And now I'm facing two felonies, felony conspiracy to vandalize, felony conspiracy to trespass, and then the underlying misdemeanors of trespass and vandalism. By the way, I'm totally against vandalism and have always been against vandalism, but I've been charged with a form of vandalism three times mm-hmm. now, or I guess, I don't know if you want to count these as separate things here. But,
Eric Nelson, thanks for joining us. Jonathan Gettleman is Linda LeMaster's lead attorney, but Eric has also been working on Linda's just-completed trial in Santa Cruz Superior Court here. Eric, give us your kind of impressions and overview of First Amendment in Santa Cruz.
Well, I'm not as experienced as the rest of my panel here. My most experience has been trying this case with Linda, and fundamentally the case was she was cited for lodging on the courthouse steps. And she was engaged in First Amendment speech, and we had a trial, and she was found guilty of factually lodging. But this presents an opportunity on appeal to challenge the constitutionality of the lodging law. First, whether it's vague, or should be void for vagueness, mm-hmm. and how it was applied. because we believe that the police told her, using the lodging law, you must leave or be cited. And that would completely infringe upon her rights. So it'll be interesting to see how this law is used in the future. I can't really say whether her being found guilty gives a benefit or emboldens the police to use this law in the future. It hasn't been used in the past in Santa Cruz, at least. Although I hear it has been throughout California, possibly. Not in Santa Cruz. We'll see where this takes us with her being found guilty. And hopefully on appeal, she could win the appeal and maybe this could stop this, because there's potential for, you know, to really stem free speech using this law in Santa Cruz.
And Linda, of course, your recently completed trial and regrettably your conviction on 647E lodging. What was your impression of the First Amendment as it was applied in your case and to you personally?
You mean during the trial?
Yeah, and during the factual.
It was my impression that they buried it under the courthouse building. When I heard the judge, though it's not fair to synopsize something down to such a composite. I mean, you know, this is where myths are made, but it seemed to me that the First Amendment was excluded. What I was or wasn't doing was excluded. I was told by the judge I wasn't allowed to say any words except yes or no. And Peace Camp 2010, which has long since died, mm-hmm. along the way being kicked by the same county deputies that gave me this ticket, did get on trial. But Peace Camp wasn't there to defend itself. It seemed like the DA spent most of the 5 days of that trial that wasn't picking a jury excoriating Peace Camp. So I bet it's got a potent ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lodging law hasn't been tested. And in my opinion, which isn't legal, it's far from even rational, but in my opinion, this judge, she seems to be hungry for justice in some sense, but she keeps blocking everything. And at one point I thought she's just in a hurry. Then I had a few other stray thoughts before the trial was out, but she didn't let us finish the demurrer at the very beginning about the law, and yet she referred to it as if it were done, for example. And all the way through the trial was like that, you know? I mean, I'm trying to keep this like a public conversation without a judge
that
I may have to see again someday.
Well, you know,
I don't see how the courts can be working if this is what they do with their juries.
Mm-hmm.
They snowed this jury and they provoked a bigotry, and they didn't talk about any of the legal issues that we were prepared for, mm-hmm. or anything I could find out about the ticket I got more than 2 years mm-hmm. before. So I'm just a little upset.
That was Linda LeMaster, but we're going to have to wait until Sunday to hear more. I may actually start this again for those who were hoping to hear the whole thing through, the whole hour show. But as you can hear, we've had interlopers in the studio desecrating the studio and the show that I've tried so hard over the years to work on. What have we got? Some musical clown coming in with 60s debris, just poo-pooing all over my show. I don't know what to say. I'll be back, however, on Sunday, and I remind you, there is a benefit for those of you who want to assist the criminal types who are accused of being in a building that was a vacant bank and trying to turn it into a community center. At least that's what the accusation
is. Hang them
all! And Uncle Dennis here probably gives you the right ideas. 9:30 tomorrow on Sunday morning, I'll be back. Give a call to the Huff Line if you see police engaging in questionable behavior or people desecrating cemeteries. 423-4833. Thank you for listening, and listen again.